Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Our bodies and those of our pets are affected by chemicals called hormones. Overproduction as well as deficiencies can wreak havoc with our health. Diseases such as diabetes mellitus, sugar diabetes, hypothyroidism, and Cushing's disease are but a few. Signs of these diseases can be subtle. They can be difficult to diagnose and even more challenging to go ahead and treat. A primary care veterinarian will often consult or refer to a board-certified veterinary internist. Our podcast today will focus on this veterinary medical specialist and learn how internists unlock the mysteries occurring under your pet skin. So I am very pleased to have Dr. Deb Greco. She's actually a classmate of mine from UC Davis. So Deb, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Bernie. Thanks for calling me.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. And you can tell us why our pets sometimes have these bizarre diseases, or seem at least bizarre, and how we can go about curing them, or at least treating them. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Having a rough day? Longing for the dog days of summer? Think your fun furry friend lives a dog's life? Well, find out everything you're begging to know as Pet Life Radio presents It's a Doggy Dog World with pet expert and award-winning author Liz Palaika. Every dog has his day, and you'll find out how to make your dog's day fun and rewarding every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Flight 291 is now boarding. All passengers, please proceed to gate 4.
And who's this traveling with us today?
This is Bailey. She's never flown Midwest Airlines before.
Hi, Bailey. She'll be fine. We take special care of our traveling pets. In fact, our Premier Pet Program was created by an employee and dog lover who believes that pets should be handled as precious cargo. And they are. Oh, and they earn travel rewards too.
Oh, good.
Thanks for flying Midwest Airlines, Bailey. Enjoy your flight. Visit MidwestAirlines.com.
Welcome to Personals.com. As a fellow cat owner, I know how finicky we are. From our friendships to our loves to just about everything, not any old website is going to satisfy us. Here at Personals.com, cat lovers from all walks of life can celebrate the photos, the stories, and videos of their beloved family member. And if you're single, here's your chance to meet someone who's perfect for you. Share your personality today for free. See you soon.
Personals.com. That's PURRSONALS.com. Finally, a place to meet that special person.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.FidoFriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
So, Dr. Deb Greco, you are a board-certified veterinary internist. What's an internist? What's different between an internist versus a general primary care physician?
Well, it's actually pretty similar to human medicine, where if you have a complicated problem regarding your kidneys or your liver or your thyroid gland, for example, you would seek out the opinion of an expert in internal diseases.
So everything under the skin is your realm?
Pretty much.
All right. And I know you have some special areas of interest, and one of those being obesity. We know that it's a real, real problem, is people as well as pets. And oftentimes people look at obesity in themselves or as their pets, just being a cosmetic issue. But there's really a lot more involved in obesity, isn't there?
Absolutely. In fact, obesity is the number one cause of malnutrition in humans and also in animals. And the consequences of obesity can be quite severe, primarily leading to things like diabetes.
But isn't obesity a factor of having overnutrition? People hear you say right now malnutrition going, wait, I thought it was eating too much.
It is eating too much, but that's a form of malnutrition. So any form of nutrition that results in a disease state would be considered malnutrition.
Understandable. So how does this malnutrition, overnutrition, affect our long-term health, either ourselves or, in this case, our pets?
Well, there was a really interesting study that was done by Nestle Purina about 5 years ago. It was published, actually, in the journal of the American Vet Med Association. And they looked at normal-weight Labradors, what they considered normal-weight at the time, and they took their siblings. So they took 48 Labradors, and they took their brothers and sisters, and they divided them into two groups. One group was fed a normal amount of food per day, and the other group was fed 25% less for the rest of their lives. What they found was that the dogs that were fed 25% less lived almost 2 years longer than the others.
So they weren't undergoing malnutrition. They were actually eating an appropriate amount of food. Would that be correct in saying?
Yes. They were eating the ones that... What this study basically showed was that what we thought was the normal amount of nutrition that resulted in dogs being just slightly overweight was detrimental to their long-term health because it made them live less long than their counterparts that were fed 25% less. So this has been shown also in humans and in rodent species and a variety of different species that this calorie restriction is beneficial for prolonging life. It also tends to ward off the incidence of disease in those dogs, too, in the subjects that undergo calorie restriction.
It's sometimes so hard. A client will come in with their pet, and I'll look at it going, huh, this little chunky monkey's really been enjoying its dog food. And they'll look at me going, no, it's just fine. You know, I look at all his other little dog friends when we go to the dog park, and they're fatter than this one, so this one must be normal. How can a pet owner assess whether or not their pet is truly overweight?
Well, that's a really good question. And sometimes it can be difficult. In particular with dogs, it's a little bit easier with cats because they're all relatively a similar size. But dogs have such disparate body sizes and shapes that it may be more difficult. But the easy way to tell if your dog or cat is overweight is to basically use and palpate your hand and your knuckles. So if you hold your hand out straight and you run your hands over the top of your knuckles, that's what the ribs should feel like in an animal with an ideal body condition. On the other hand, if you turn your hand over and were to palpate or to feel the underside of your palm, that is what the ribs of an overweight animal feels like.
So pinching an inch when you turn your hand upside down.
Yeah.
Hopefully everybody can feel the tops of their bones on the top of their hand. Yes. If you can't, then yes. Yeah, you have yourself a problem. So you're saying these pets that if you can't feel their ribs and they're overweight, it shortens their lifespan. What other medical problems are associated with that pet being overweight?
A really good question, and it depends on the species. In the case of dogs, they often will develop arthritis as a secondary complication of obesity. And this is not only because they're carrying more weight, but it's also because the fat is producing inflammatory compounds, hormones, and different chemicals that are actually attacking the joint and causing inflammation in the joint. So by taking the weight off in these animals with arthritis, it actually improves their arthritis by reducing inflammation.
Fat is not just an innocuous space filler. It really has medical issues associated with it.
Exactly. Yes, that's right. It's an important, it's a vital and chemically active tissue in the body, just like an endocrine organ. And some people have called it the largest endocrine organ because it does produce hormones.
And for somebody who doesn't understand what endocrine is, it's like our thyroid gland or ovaries or testicles, things that produce these chemicals.
Yeah. With cats, the problem is that they are actually similar to humans, and they will develop a condition called type 2 diabetes when they are overweight. And this, of course, can shorten their lifespan because some owners will not be willing to give them insulin or other medications. But also it leads to a lot of different complications, just as it does with people. Cats don't really get heart disease, but they can get nerve disease and also kidney disease from their diabetes itself.
One of the interesting bits of trivia I read someplace is that a orange and white, I think this was just a male cat, was four times, if it was obese, four times more likely to develop diabetes than a non-orange and white male cat. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right. And the question is it because they're orange or is it because they're male? And as you know, we were taught in vet school, orange cats are usually male because the orange gene is recessive and doesn't reside on the Y chromosome. So it's expressed in the male. And for a female to be orange, they have to have two recessive genes, so it's much less likely.
So if you have a diabetic cat, and this has happened to me many times, a client comes in, gee, doc, has been drinking tons of water, urinating outside of the box, on and on and on, usually chubby, you do the blood work, you do a urine test, and it's a diabetic. Then I say, all right, we're probably going to have to start this cat on insulin, and they give you this horrid look going, no, I can't even look at a needle, let alone give my cat an injection one or two times a day. Are there alternatives? Is that typically the best thing to do for a diabetic cat, or insulin injections?
Well, it depends. I like to say that we do have options, and if you find yourself in a situation where your cat has diabetes and your veterinarian recommends insulin but you don't feel comfortable giving it, you can be referred to an internal medicine specialist that will help you put the cat on diet, for one thing. We found that diets that are high in protein, low in carbohydrate, tend to be beneficial to these cats. And when those diets are fed along with either a pill, oral hypoglycemic pill, or a short course of insulin, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, many of those cats can then eventually be managed on diet alone through the rest of their life.
I think you were the one that I first heard term this, instead of the Atkins diet, it was the Catkins diet.
Yeah, I do use that so that people get an idea that what we're doing is trying to feed a high-protein diet similar to what they would eat in the wild.
So that ground mouse is still the quintessential best diet for a cat.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not something that is easily accepted by the general public, but probably the closest that we can get to that is usually canned foods that tend to be lower in carbohydrates than the dry counterparts.
So talking about just cats in general and long-term health, trying to keep their weight under control, yes, is very important. Would you recommend canned versus dry for a maintenance diet?
I think that it depends on the client. I would personally prefer to feed and have fed in the past. I don't have cats right now, but I have had them in the past. I would prefer to feed a canned diet because I feel that it is lower in carbohydrate and it provides water. Since cats are desert species, as you and I know, they don't like to drink very much. So it does provide water as well. However, some people prefer the convenience of dry food, in which case, in general, I recommend that they feed the meal feed, the dry food. So the biggest concern I have about dry food is that people have a tendency to leave it out all the time, which will promote obesity.
Well, it doesn't eat a lot, Doctor. It just goes and it nibbles, and then it goes back and nibbles some more. I usually tell people, what does a cat do? It eats, sleeps, poops, sleeps some more. So leaving that food out is me with a box of candy. It goes pretty quickly sometimes.
Or a bag of chips. I call them the cat potato chips.
Yes, very much so. Well, we've been talking to Dr. Deborah Greco. She is a board-certified veterinary internist, talking about all of those mysteries going on underneath a kitty or dog's skin. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Passengers, please fasten your seatbelts, put your seatbacks and sleeping pets in their full upright position, and prepare for takeoff.
Pet Life Radio presents Travel Tales, the show where you'll get great travel ideas on perfect places for you and your pet. From Paris to paradise, south of the border to the South Seas, Travel Tales will give you cool tips on fun vacation destinations to travel with your pet, pet-friendly hotels, and advice on how to travel safely and happily with your furry best friends. So, get ready to pack the bags and the bones with your Travel Tales hosts, Susan Sims and Nicholas Veslowski, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
My guest today is Dr. Deborah Greco, and we're talking about some of the endocrine diseases, these hormone diseases that cats and dogs get. We're just talking, Deb, about diabetes. How does diabetes in cats differ from diabetes in dogs?
Well, cats get a form of diabetes that's similar to what most Americans and most humans get, and that's called type 2 diabetes. It's also adult onset is the other name for it, although we are starting to see it more in children as well. It is associated with being overweight, and that's in contrast to type 1 diabetes, which is what dogs usually get. Type 1 diabetes is an actual complete deficiency of insulin, where the individual is prone to developing ketones in the blood. It can be a very dangerous situation and always requires insulin, whereas type 2 diabetes doesn't require insulin most of the time. It only requires it for a short period of time, usually in cats and same in people. So it's called non-insulin dependent diabetes as well.
Another condition, getting back to cats a bit, is we're seeing more and more these days, probably because cats are living longer and we're getting better at finding it, is a condition known as hyperthyroidism, an overactive thyroid. Could you address that a little bit of what people would see and how it's diagnosed and treated?
Sure. Hyperthyroidism is a very interesting disease. It was not very common prior to about 1975. And then we started to see increasing numbers, and it has actually increased in incidence over the years. It has in humans as well, so they think that there may be some environmental factor that is driving this. Essentially, it occurs in cats older than 10 years of age. I mean, it can occur in cats a little bit younger than that, but mostly it's cats over 10. And they generally will have a weight loss as their primary sign. So the cat maybe was overweight before and starts losing weight. You should be concerned that this cat might be developing hyperthyroidism. The good news about hyperthyroidism is it's readily treatable, and most veterinarians will be able to recognize the clinical signs, excessive drinking, excessive urination, and weight loss, all of which would point to a thyroid problem.
I have a lot of clients come in with their older cats going, wow, doc, this new food is just wonderful. The cat started losing weight. It's just a lot more active. It's just running around. You know, it's found that proverbial fountain of youth. And I look at the pet going, huh, can I take a blood test, please? And all too often find that that thyroid is overactive. You were talking about treating it. What are some of the ways of treating these kitties?
Well, there's three basic ways to treat the cat with hyperthyroidism. The first one is the one that's used most often. It's a medical treatment. It's a pill called tapazole or methimazole. And it works to block the synthesis of thyroid hormones, or the building blocks, basically. It interferes with the building blocks of thyroid hormone. So it lowers thyroid levels in the blood. Unfortunately, though, this is not a permanent treatment because the thyroid tumor, it's not a malignant tumor, it's a benign tumor, but the thyroid itself continues to grow, and therefore I usually recommend one of the other treatments, the first of which is surgical, the second of which is to take a dose of radioactive iodine.
It almost sounds a little scary for people, radioactive iodine, but I know I've had several of my own clients who've had their cats go through that treatment, and they love it, because otherwise it's typically poking a pill down a cat's throat once or twice a day, and after the first week, the pet goes, excuse me, I know what you're going to do, and is now under the bed.
Yep, that's exactly right, and that's the other problem with the pills. They also have a high rate of side effects, so vomiting, diarrhea, things like that can be associated with the pills. The iodine is completely painless. The only thing you have to do is give up your kitty cat for about 3 or 4 days, sometimes up to 7, depending on the state. And it's a completely painless treatment. And I can tell you that I had it when I was in vet school because I had to take it for a thyroid tumor myself. And there's just, it's not any concern at all.
And you don't glow at night, you know, and your cat won't glow at night.
And your cats won't either, yeah.
If you don't treat, what happens to the kitty besides losing weight?
Well, yes, they can, as the disease advances, they will start to have damage to their internal organs, in particular the heart and the kidney. Their blood pressure will be very high. They can develop severe arrhythmias of their heart, where their heart doesn't beat normally. They can develop kidney failure and also liver failure in some cases.
And sometimes even blindness. I've had a couple of cats, and I have to admit, this was before I was really aware of the condition as much as I am now, and it was my own cat who started losing vision in one of its eyes because it was hypertensive, and that was my first indication that Zachary was having a problem, had an overactive thyroid, and thankfully getting the blood pressure under control, he was able to get sight back in that eye. But it's scary, so people really do need to stay on top of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. The eye damage is a big big concern, particularly with the high blood pressure associated with it.
Well, going back to the opposite of that pet who now is losing weight because they're having this overactive thyroid, getting back a little bit to the obesity, there's a lot of talk now about this new obesity medication out for people, a lie, where it seems as though you just, I was reading the side effects, not taking it myself, but reading the side effects, what they're saying, it's uncontrollable greasy diarrhea going, gee, I think I'd rather be fat. But now there's there's diet medication out there for dogs. How is it working? What do you think of it? How are you recommending this or not recommending this for the people who are coming to you with their fat dogs?
Well, that's a really good question because I think you have to put this in perspective. If the obesity is really severe, the dog has failed diets previously, or if it's causing harm to the dog, for example, let's say you have an overweight Rottweiler that has a cranial cruciate ligament or a ligament in the knee that has been damaged because of being overweight.
A football injury.
That's a dog that can't exercise. So these drugs are helpful in those cases because they're able to take some of the weight off of the dog without having to increase exercise, which is often the case with most most diet programs.
What's nice about this medication, because I've been using it in my practice now for the last several months, it's made by the Pfizer company called Slentrol. It's kind of what mom always told us to do when you're eating. Eat slowly, because when you're eating slowly and the food is broken down in your digestive tract, it releases chemicals, it goes to the brain that says, and there's a satiety center, a center in the brain that says, really, you've had enough to eat now, you can stop. So if I have this correct, it releases this chemical, it goes to the brain, the pet now doesn't want to beg at the dinner table because it goes, I've had enough, thank you very much. And yes, I can definitely see what you're saying. It's especially that pet that can't get out there and exercise, though exercise and diet is probably the best way for everyone, pets and animals and people to go. It helps them just feel satiated.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because that's the biggest reason why diets fail, too, is that the dog is continuously, or cat, is continuously begging for food. Unfortunately, we can't use that drug in cats because cats are prone to a condition called hepatic lipidosis, and for them to stop eating, they can be prone to that, and that can be very dangerous.
How would you put a cat, then, on a diet, one of these little chunky monkey cats that's walking around?
Well, I think with cats, what you want to do is feed a diet that's higher in protein, a little bit lower in fat than the diabetic formulations, which are high protein, low carb. You also want low fat, so you have to kind of sacrifice a little bit on the carbohydrate for the weight loss. But if you have a cat that's just overweight, it doesn't have any other conditions like diabetes, I'll usually recommend a food that's a little bit higher in protein and lower in fat and restrict the calories, essentially. Sometimes this is a problem with multi-cat household, and so my little trick for that is to build what I call the kitty cafe, where the fat cat can't walk through the skinny door of the kitty cafe. So you build a little box with a slot in it, and only the skinny cat can get in.
I like that idea. That's very good.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to start designing these little kitty cafes so people can buy these kitty cafes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, to keep your fat cat away from the food and your skinny cat have access to it.
And new project. Probably the other thing that people need to keep in mind, too, is best thing to do for the obesity is don't let it happen in the first place. When you have that puppy and kitten, yes, they're growing very quickly, but you don't want that chubby pet, because once you form those fat cells in people or your pets, they're there for life unless you do liposuction, and veterinarians as such are not doing liposuction on pets.
That's exactly right. And one of the interesting studies that was recently done out of the University of Georgia, they did a study in cats where they showed that neutering cats, male cats, caused them to have a reduction in their energy expenditure of almost 30% to 40%. So we also need to reduce the amount of calories they're eating by the same amount because of the neutering. And that's because testosterone and also estrogen to a certain point has effects on where fat is deposited and how quickly it's deposited. So when you take away those influences, they're more prone to put on fat.
I had a client earlier this week where I convinced her to go ahead and spay her dog. And on my little go-home sheet, I said, and now make sure that you decrease the amount that you're feeding by about a third because your pet's metabolism is going to slow down. She called me the following day just beside herself, like, oh my God, now my dog is going to get fat because you spayed it. I said, there's more pros than cons for spaying that pet. So still very glad that you did it. Just make sure that you realize it's no longer that growing puppy. The only growing it's going to be doing is out, not up.
Right, exactly. And, you know, we're not going to stop spaying and neutering pets because that's the right thing to do for them. But we just need to make the clients aware that they need to cut back on the food.
Well, Dr. Deborah Greco, I do appreciate you being with us today. You've given us some great information of all those little mysteries going on underneath a pet's fur. So today our goal was to educate people about what's going on under the fur. Hopefully we've entertained you a little bit and motivated you to be the best pet owner that you can be. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com. I'm Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Please tune in next week. We'll be talking about more pet issues. Thanks for being with us. Take care. Bye-bye.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.